Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John Johnson, and this is Radio Edutalk. It's Wednesday, the 4th of June, and rather than have a guest this week, I'm sitting here in Glasgow all by myself. I'm going to talk a bit about the Alt Open Scotland SIG event, which was on in Edinburgh yesterday, the 3rd of June. Myself and my colleague Ian Stewart went along to talk a wee bit about GLOW, the intranet for education or for schools in Scotland, but we spent the whole day there listening to the other talks, and it was a wonderful day, lots of really interesting stuff. My idea originally was to take the YouTube recording of the whole conference and to select interesting bits out of that, because it is hours long, and to play some of that while I was talking, but I didn't realise that between yesterday and today I wouldn't really have the time to watch a whole several hours worth of video and select audio, so it wasn't good planning on my part. I did, however, take a bunch of notes from the conference, and I'm just going to talk through some of those for a wee while. I'll also probably break it up a wee bit by playing the odd bit of music, or not actually music, but pre-records just from around Open Education, just to give myself time to catch breath. The conference yesterday was opened by Joe Wilson of the SQA, and he introduced all as a space for us to discuss technologies across institutions and bodies in an open space. And one of the first points Joe made was that this idea that this was a really good time to start talking about open in education in Scotland. We've just had in schools with the introduction of the Curriculum for Excellence. We've had the coming on stream of the new NAT 4 and 5, lots more stuff, and teachers need help and need resources, and one way to do this would be for us to share these things openly. So Joe really saw the sort of hectic rate of change in Scottish education as an opportunity to open up and help and share things. He also mentioned a lot of other interesting things, but one of the things that interested me, I think, was the fact he talked about institutions and learners' relationships changing, and learners can learn a lot of things without coming to institutions. So this led to the idea that the best way to handle this was to be open and to share. And Joe asked a few sort of hard questions. Where are the communities of practice? How can we enable learners to carry any portfolio between learning institutions and employers? Because quite often these things in colleges are shut off once they're finished and the pupil leaves. What are we doing about open badges, for instance, and other things? And how can institutions help informal learners? Now, some of these questions were then later on answered in part by different presenters. After that, then Joe was followed with an update from Alt, from Marion Deepwall, who just really introduced and explained a bit about Alt, which I'm not going to do much more than point to the website, which is www.alt.ac.uk, and I'll pop that in the show notes. If you are listening to the live stream and you were at Alt, or you've got something to say about this and you'd like to join in the conversation, you could use the hashtag on Twitter, Edutalk. And if you actually wanted to say something, as in speak out loud, if you get in touch with me on Twitter, I'll try and pull you into a Skype call in some way later on. We usually have an email address as well, but since I'm on my own, I'm not monitoring all channels. So I'm paying attention to Twitter as much as I can, and I'm happy to have a wee yak on Skype if anybody wants to. So one of the interesting things Marion talked about from Alt was about the Octel open course in tech enhanced learning. And one of the things that was the interesting thing that I thought came out of that is 25% of these participants come actually from outside higher education. And the other thing, that the course was being run by voluntary effort and there was no income generation, but I presume it feeds into the whole sort of learning ecosystem. And people later on in the day talked about the fact by providing open resources you would add value to your institution. After Marianne's discussion of ALT, we had Colin Cook, who was Deputy Director of Digital Strategy from the Scottish Government, who was really talking about Scottish Government perspectives on how the country would sustain itself as a leader of digital. He didn't really touch on open practices so much, but he did explain to the various people that Scotland has a desire to be a world-class player in the digital realm, and to do that there's various things they're doing. They're covering infrastructure and trying to get rural community broadband up and running right across the country. They're interested in digital literacies, and we know the fact that Scotland, there's a great need for digitally developed workers. Employers are seeking these people out, and this can be built up, this capacity can be built up in all sorts of places, through community effort, through voluntary effort, through the third sector, kind of all working together to help the sort of digitally excluded. And the digital sector in Scotland is sort of joining gas and oil is really important economically. And Colin went on to talk about, you know, long term we're looking to deal with education filling gaps. And one of the things he did mention, and he mentioned just in passing, was the thing that Ian and I was going to talk about, GLOW, as an example of commitment to the development of digital literacy and digital skills across Scotland. The next people talking were David Beards and Ronald McIntyre. David was from Scottish Funding Council and Ronald was from OU Scotland. And they were talking about Scotland's Open Education Project. And this has been funded by, I guess, the government, and they've got about over £1 million over 3 years. And they were talking about, Ronald started off talking about what we talk about when we talk about open, which I thought was an interesting take on what we talk about when we talk about, as it slips right out of my mind, what we were talking about, what the play on words is. But the things he thought we should be talking about is licensing technology, learning, design and content. Or rather, that's what we do talk about. We talk about platforms and repositories and marketing and metadata. And he said we really should be talking instead about teaching and learning. We should be opening up to people. We should be thinking about how being open maybe shifts the power and knowledge, and how that's actually shifting anyway. And how we talk to people outside the room. And I think this was a sort of area that came up again and again from different speakers. The people in the room in the old special interest group were particularly interested and committed to open, and how do we actually get the ideas past that, past the people who have signed up already. They then opened this discussion out to the floor and talked about, or somebody talked about, the fact that this transfer of power is a cultural problem. And again, that there's a good economic argument for being open. Institutions, colleges and things may get some payback from being open. They may attract better people or more people to their courses, or they may create a buzz around a subject. And we'll go on to more about that as well. And the project, he said, wasn't in the business of creating repositories, but to point to other existing ones, like the Joram repository that was run by JISC. And he also, somebody said there was a danger, and I don't know exactly where this is coming from, of losing folk in Scotland's third sector who had the knowledge and skills to support MOOCs. And I've lost my flow in my notes there, and I don't know where that came from, but it would seem a worry that we're ready to lose people before we really got started with the open. Joe Wilson came back with individuals need permission from institutions to be open. And what would an open institution look like? And what would an open individual practitioner look like? And I think he was just kind of pointing out the way to the fact that we probably need permission, and most of us need permission from the people we work for to actually be open in our working practices, because of IP, because of your commitment to your employer and all sorts of other things. So we really do need to steer from the top down in some cases to open up. I'm just going to take a wee break now and play one of my favourite pieces of work from an open educator. This is Bag of Gold. It's Gardner Campbell, American professor, remixed by Tom Woodward, and its famous Bag of Gold speech. So I'll see you in a couple of minutes.
This is always the great deadly zone. Our biochemistry, the neurons. We live in an age of marvels and wonders that don't seem to be making a substantial difference. What a waste. Why is this not happening? We've had the internet, we've had computers, we've had all of this amazing conversation about the possibilities. Is this making a difference? When's the tide turn? When do we actually get to the place where we can say, yeah, we're on the upswing? But we're going to forge through this. We're really going to make it. I've got a good feeling about this. I believe that that is true. It makes me do what I do. Day after day, I say, well, I have a bag of gold. Would you like a bag of gold? And people say, where do you find time for bags of gold? Gold, is that sustainable? 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 No, you spend it. Well, what would you spend it on? What would you like to spend it on? I don't have time for your philosophical questions, Gardner. Higher education is a place where we train people to be able to take advantage of this to the fullest and surprise us with the things we haven't discovered about what this can mean. But whatever it means, and we may disagree about what it means, look at that. It's a bag of gold. What part of that do you not understand? Oh no, another currency to master. I'm not saying that this is going to be easy, or that it's not going to have problems or be fraught or spawn a whole new wave of Mila cyber computing crime. But if it's going to happen, and there are great possibilities there, why does that not make a difference? You know, why hasn't that made people stop and say, oh, I guess I could recapture a sense of wonder under these circumstances? It's a bag of gold. What part of that do you not understand? Today's technologies and their consequent environments succeed each other so rapidly that one environment makes us aware of the next. Technologies begin to perform the function of art in making us aware of the psychic and social consequences of technology. We are entering the new age of education that is programmed for discovery rather than instruction. It's a bag of gold. What part of that do you not understand? This is a time of wonders. I would like to graduate a generation of students who will help me hear strange correspondences and grand harmonies that I have not yet imagined. Or maybe we don't have time to amplify our beings that way. We have to do things that don't happen naturally. But once we do those things, we find a bag of gold. I think the disruption we're witnessing today is a disruption on the scale of the development of the written alphabet. Now that I have done it, now that I've arranged it, now that I have thought about it, I'm going to put it out there because it may be valuable to someone. It's a bag of gold. What part of that do you not understand? Because I may find the unmet friend. Because, as was said so memorably by John Mott in his presentation, meaning happens when the two people connect. Thinking aloud, willing to tell the story of the process of the learning. I'd like students to think that they begin their life's work when they come to school. It's a bag of gold. What part of that do you not understand? That's what I'm in it for. It's a bag of gold. What part of that do you not understand?
Sorry. So I just love that. But if you ever get the chance, you should seek out Carmel Gardner's blog if you don't know about it. See presentations that he's done. Wonderful stuff about. I've linked a lot to open education and educating people online. The next, back at the Open Scotland conference yesterday, the next speaker was Suzanne Scott from Border Colleges, who was talking about, her title was called Open Badges, Open Border. And she was, of course, as it sounds like, talking about the open badges from Mozilla in the main, and the idea of open badges. Kind of presume that most people have heard a wee bit about it. What I really liked about Suzanne's talk, and it was just a great talk, was the fact it was very much based in reality and practice. They had been working for several years in encouraging the use of open badges in the college, and some of the things they thought was that they were really good for of connecting with students who were in danger of dropping out, as they sort of chunk achievement into smaller bits and can just step them through things and give a bit of recognition. But it's quite a hard concept to get educators to take up, and I think part of this, and this didn't come from Suzanne's talk, this comes from me, is that the technology around them is quite new. And it's still experimental to some extent, although I had a brief exploration of Mozilla Backpack again today, and it is greatly improved since the last time I looked at it. It's a lot easier for me to access data about my badges and things now. So I think that's another reason to be encouraged, that it's continually been worked on. They obviously had one of the biggest challenges, I say, was the people Suzanne mentioned, who the middle management and staff who were concerned. There was even the idea that the students maybe could award badges to staff to encourage staff in the use of open badges. That obviously raised some concerns from the staff, and there was still, Suzanne said, a lot of work to do. What they were needing to do was make this cultural shift to get the idea you could use that, and the concerns needed to be addressed through education and example. And I thought that a sort of interesting tipping point for the open badges thing was the HR people sort of started supporting CPD sessions with open badges. And what they actually did is remove the normal certification and award badges instead. So all staff now have a badge, so that they've got the idea of it, and it's actually increased the sort of attendance and enthusiasm about CPD. It seems to have actually helped staff see the value in CPD sessions, and they're not just something that's mandatory, and so that actually seems to have made an impact there, and that hopefully that would spill down and lead to more use of badges by the educators with their students. They've got a plan well developed now in the Borders, with a 3-year plan, I believe, to be developing badges. They're looking at ways to accredit prior learning and thinking about how you can use badges as a pathway to a particular destination. So if a student wants to learn about a particular idea or end up with in a particular place, there's a path through. They can see the sort of badges as almost like stepping stones leading to that destination. And the other thing which I think is really interesting is that they're working on raising awareness with local employers so that they can understand badges and they can maybe value badges when they're trying to employ somebody, or, you know, look at somebody's CV. Maybe we need a way to figure out how to display badges to people like this. So I had an awful lot to think about from the badges thing, and I said I spent some time today at work just having another wee poke around through the back end of Mozilla backpack and badges, and I really hope in a sort of professional way we can have learned some lessons in GLOW, because there is the intention certainly of exploring badges in the GLOW system in Scotland, and it'd be really great to be able to learn from Border College and bring that information into to school. After Suzanne spoke, we broke for lunch, which was a really nice lunch, thanks Alt, I enjoyed it thoroughly. And afterwards we came back from Jonathan Worth from, it said, Coventry University. Now I had heard a wee bit about Jonathan before through DS106 and through his sort of work in supplying images to be played with by the online community. I knew a wee bit about Phonar, his course, but not very much. And this is one of the highlights of my day, listening to Jonathan's story of how he got from being somebody who was fairly closed and uptight about IP and copyright on the web to somebody who is now running huge courses, or courses that have huge participation right round the globe. I would definitely try and seek out information about Jonathan if you're interested in open learning, and I'll certainly try and dig out one or two links for the show notes to go with this post. But he's a professional photographer, and it's obvious he's a highly valued photographer. He's got studios in New York and the UK. It seemed his photographs have been on the cover of Rolling Stone and other places, and he explained the sort of struggles he went through from first finding his images distributed on the internet and being worried about those and seeing those as a threat, to the position where he now realises the images are not his product. His product is photographs. You can't make images scarce. It's easy to copy them, it's easy to spread them around. And again, I wouldn't spoil trying to retell a story here, but I would seek him out on the internet and have a look. And as I say, I'll try and ping some links in. He started a class, Phonar, which is a photographer's course, as in Coventry University. And I believe at the time he started thinking of the open stuff, his class, he had a class of about 9 people expected to take the course, and he sort of open sourced how to teach the course and put it online, and very quickly he was up to 10,000 people interacting with the course, posting photographs that were taken online. And he realises that the value of the teacher is not information. It's not worth going head to head with the internet. It's curation. And the class allows people to use their own spaces. It becomes a hub, pulling stuff from Flickr, YouTube, Vimeo, and places like that into the hub through just general open technologies. This has developed into another course called Phonar Nation, which is the biggest youth photography class in history. And the idea there is you don't need a phone, you don't need a focus camera, you need a phone. It started in five cities across the world and has spread, five cities across the USA, and has spread right across the world. It is, what he says, an undiminishing resource. It just keeps on growing. And the third project he talked about was the World Press Photo Academy, which used to be a competition where nine people got to join in and get their images published by the World Press Association. And the thing Jonathan suggested, that they open the course up so that it is online. And I've written down in the notes, and I'm finding it hard to believe, and maybe it's a blip on my part, there seem to be 11 million people involved in the course. During this talk, Jonathan had a sort of stream of evidence about these courses. One of them was just the number of pictures flashing by as they were posted to Flickr, showing the sort of, I guess, a lack of scarcity among images. And he started and finished with what looked to me like extraordinary photographs. And I presumed at the start of the talk that this was his work as a professional photographer. And it turned out, I think, to be an Indian student who had taken the photographs with her phone and used a torch as some sort of making light swirls across pictures of her relatives. And I said it was lovely work, which I assumed it was something I would not be surprised to see in a magazine, although I haven't got much of an eye for digital for photography one way or the other. But I certainly didn't think it was just one of the 11 million people that participated in this product. The next person up was Sheila McNeil from Glasgow Caledonia University, who was talking about bringing the digital into their university, into various parts, getting digital participation up, improving information literacy, and other ideas. Unfortunately, my notes are really scanty because at that point, Ian Stewart and myself had realised that we had thought we were there to talk about GLOW for 15 minutes, and it turned out that it was to be expanded to half an hour. So I started going through what I was talking about in a slight panic, so I didn't catch all of Sheila's talk, or I listened to most of it, but my mind was not on taking notes. I certainly would think it's well worth revisiting the video that was taken, just to see it, because as I say, I'm exploring how you best encourage the digital right across a university. After that, it was Ian's myself's turn, and we talked a wee bit about GLOW, just really introducing people, I think, in mostly the third sector, to what's going on in primary and secondary schools across Scotland and what our vision is for GLOW going forward. One of the principles that the ICT and Excellence group put forward as a sort of founding of GLOW is it should be as open as possible. It shouldn't keep things behind the log on for the sake of it. This may be tricky. It's a bit of a challenge because there's lots of safety and data protection issues, and we discussed some of those for a wee while. After that, the last bit of the day was Laura M. Campbell from CETUS, who was talking about the Scottish Open Education Declaration. And if you don't know it, I had Lorna on EduTalk a wee while ago talking about open education in general and the declaration. But it just helped a lot for me to listen again. I didn't realise that the document it was based on, that was based on the Paris We Are Declaration, but it only talks really about educational resources. And the Scottish version is opening it up to include open education generally. The Paris one was a UNESCO effort. And the other thing about the Declaration, and again I'll put the link to it in the show notes, is it's not a Scottish government document, it's a community draft. And the idea is they're hoping that people will get behind it and align to it, or will go in and discuss it. And it's quite nicely set up in WordPress with a paragraph by paragraph commenting facility, and a lot of people have been in, and Laura took us through some of the comments that people had been putting on. I say again, it's another thing I think you really need to go out and have a read at if you're Scottish and you're interested in open education at all, or just generally if you're interested. And the talks you talked about Scotland being a big little country following Slovenia, and Slovenia have opened everything up from the top across their education in a rather interesting way. Again, the same things as came up almost every speaker, is that the important thing is not so much the technology, it's a cultural shift which is needed to engage with practitioners. This idea that they need to people need to be given permission to share. Maybe they need to have an obligation in some cases to share. And there was various views about this from the floor about the difficulty for various things. But maybe the start of this would be for us to recommend, rather than insist on, a CC BY or a CC BY AS license. I just use the Creative Commons thing, and that kind of interestingly fades into what I know about government. There's an open government license which seems to be developing. I'm not sure completely about the details in Scotland, which would sort of reflect or align itself quite closely to the Creative Commons licenses that are popular among open educators. And what we need now is cross-section engagement to get teachers, lecturers on board with the idea of being open, explaining the advantages. And I'd say there was a lot of those talked about in the day. One of the things, if I go back to Jonathan Worth's again, was that the university where he ran these open courses saw its value go up, and that the courses are now very high up the sort of list, and they're at the top of the media and photography courses as given satisfaction to learners. They are heavily subscribed, subscription to actual university course. By releasing for free the material, they've actually increased the number of people who are coming in and paying to do the course and take the course at university, which is maybe the ultimate argument for people that need to generate income and are worried about being open. And at the end of the day, there was a bit of a plenary discussion which went back and forward over various things again, and I just listened by that time because I've been taking notes for a considerable length of time. I don't know how useful or how clear it is listening to somebody rambling over notes from a conference for several days, but my big takeaway was that I probably am listening to other people, somebody who would consider themselves now an open educator. I think you can see, I've learned myself, the benefits of being open. If you're interested in this, one of the really good resources to look at that wasn't talked about in the conference was Al Levine's Tales, Strange Tales of Open Educators. I might have got the name slightly wrong, but again, I'll pop it in the show notes, where various people have talked to camera and YouTube about the good things that have happened to them by being open. One way of getting the benefits. That there's clearly a growing movement interested from all sorts of reasons, from, well, government resources. We the people have paid for them, so we should have open access to them, to the fact that sharing our resources in an open way will solve a lot of our problems. That's another idea. Or that our institutions will become more valued, and open education can almost be seen as an invitation or an advert for good courses and good institutions. I would suggest that you, if you're interested in this, that you follow up some of the links that I stick in with the show notes. I'll be publishing this in a couple of days on edutalk.cc. Over on Edutalk, we have got quite a few things lined up. Which I'm just trying to load in my browser at the moment. But coming up tomorrow night, David will be online at 7:45 talking to Dr. Margaret Sutherland about, from the University of Glasgow, about improving the educational experience of highly able pupils in the early years. Next Wednesday, we'll be back talking to Steve Bunce on knitting and programming. I'm looking forward to that. Thursday next week, we've got Professor Rosemary Sage on the Professional Learning for Teachers channel. And the week after that, there is more. We've got Bill Harris and Dr. Laura Calusi Gray talking. And we've got a pretty packed programme all the way through to the end of term here in Scotland, the end of June. On Saturday, I'll be at the Pedigoo event in Glasgow, and I hope to chat to people, do a bit of recording, and maybe even some live broadcasting through the day for folk who are talking and discussing Pedigoo, pedagogy in their free time on Saturdays. David was at the CELMAS conference yesterday, and I think we've got some audio coming up from that on Edutalk. So there's always something to listen to. I've noticed that Ian at Sheffield has been back posting a couple more things. He posts things through through Audioboo and tags them Edutalk, and they're picked up and posted straight to Edutalk. If anybody else is interested in joining in the conversation, you're always welcome to do so in many ways that you can find out in the website. Anyway, if you've been listening, thanks very much. If you want to get in touch, you can get in touch by emailing edutalker, edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk, or by tweeting at John Johnson, or using the hashtag edutalk. And we're always interested to hear from people who want to broadcast, want to be on the show, or have you something to discuss, something that you heard that's been on the show. So, from me, good night.